The thing that you're talking about with the yellow plastic trimming, I think there was an evening dress that she wears in Portugal, in Lisbon, right. and the trimming is all in, it is in polyurethane. So we use a lot of latex, but we also use loads of polyurethane because we could frill it and do lots of nice things with it that we could add onto the clothes.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Art of Costume Podcast. I'm Elizabeth Joy Glass.
And I'm Spencer Williams. Elizabeth, good to see you.
Good to see you. How's it going?
It's going. It's award season. And so it's our time to shine.
It is. This has been a thrilling year for awards season, I must say.
I can't keep up. I'm kind of exhausted. I don't get awards season's fatigue, but I think it's because we were in, like, at least I was in the endless Emmy cycle with them getting postponed. So I feel like I've been in awards season since, I don't know, March of last year. And then we just got our Oscar nominations, and I am so excited for costume design. I just gotta say, I predicted all of them. So
you did.
I think I'm becoming a little bit of a machine. We have
you're like
Barbie.
I know.
Yeah, we have Barbie with Jacqueline Duran, which I think wasn't a shocker. I think we even said that. I mean, willing to bet money.
Like, the work she put into that, how it just flawlessly came out, like, deserved.
Right. Yeah, we all saw it coming. I saw it coming before the film even came out, honestly. Next, we had Killers of the Flower Moon with Jacqueline West, which I absolutely love. She was on the podcast late last year. I would be really excited to see that film take the Oscar just because of all the work and, you know, integrity and accuracy they put into it. I think it really paid off. Also, two Jacquelines nominated in this category. It's kind of like, you know, I want to call it Battle of the Jacquelines, but I won't.
No.
Then we have Napoleon with Janti Yates and David Crossman, which I'm very excited about. Have you seen Napoleon yet?
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm from, like, the images and the trailers, I'm not surprised. That looks like it was, like, just like way too much, like, research and like involved detail she had to put into that.
There is a million and two costumes. David Crossman did all of the military uniforms, all the war scenes, and then Janti Yates did basically everything else, including this incredible coronation scene that you have to see. The costumes are just,
I was looking to see if they had, like, reissued it to see it in theaters, but so far, no.
If I see anything, I'll let you know. Next up, we have Oppenheimer with costumes designed by Alan Mirajnik. I mean, I'm super stoked about that. She deserves it.
That was a wild movie.
I'm glad for Oppenheimer. I mean, first of all, it's nominated for basically everything.
Yeah.
I think Ellen did such an incredible job with those costumes and really was able to tell the story of this man throughout decades. And I think it just looked, like, effortless. And Yeah, I think it's a masterpiece. So I'm happy for Ellen.
Absolutely.
And then we have our final nomination, which is actually the topic of today's conversation. Poor Things, if costumes designed by Holly Waddington.
Yes.
And I love this movie. I'm not going to reveal any biases, but Poor Things is definitely one of my tops.
Because you see the trailers and you're like, oh, that's going to be a good costume movie.
Yeah.
And then you, because I went into this knowing like nothing about the story, was blown away by that. And then the costumes, because they reveal so little in the trailers. So I was like, okay, the costumes are clearly going to be good. But oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It was like, I was kind of into steampunk in like high school. And this was like high school Elizabeth's like steampunk dream of what fashion could be.
Yeah. It's very... like, it's just, it's so unique. And it reminds me of the first time I saw Crimson Peak, honestly. Like, it's just so innovative and colorful. And the materials are just, like, something you would never think of. And, like, this came out of someone's brain. You know, it's just, like, it drives me crazy. And I love it. It's so beautiful. And every single costume, at least for what Bella Baxter wore, you're like, wow, I love that. Wow, I love that. Just every single one. Even when she was like, Bella Baxter was, you know, maybe not in a good place, like the end of the film, we'll say. And, but even that costume, I was like, wow, this is sickening, even though she clearly is uncomfortable right now.
No, each piece was just so perfect for the moment, for the characters, like incredible. I really want Holly to like collaborate with someone, put out a fashion line for this, because I am like about to go get some like really light cottons and like turn those bloomers she had into shorts for the summer.
Yeah.
Like, so that many is comments on my about checklist. The bloomers. I was like, and those are so cute.
They're super cute. We should mention that Elizabeth is wearing the biggest sleeves ever right now, and I'm just gagging. It's so good.
I got two of these sweatshirts with these puff sleeves like 2 years ago, and like I've always liked them, but I've like I haven't worn them that much. Saw Poor Things literally put this on the next day.
Making this movie our personality. I think we should just jump into it because we have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. So, Spencer, give us a summary.
Okay. Poor Things. Brought back to life by an unorthodox scientist, a young woman runs off with a lawyer on a whirlwind adventure across the continents. Free from the prejudices of her times, she grows steadfast in her purpose to stand for equality and liberation. And that is Poor Things.
Yes, if you have not seen Poor Things, get yourself to a movie theater.
As soon as possible. And it's really great in the theaters, too.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not one to be like, oh, you have to go see everything in a movie theater. Oh, my gosh. Go see this in a movie theater.
Yeah.
Like... do it. Going behind the costumes, we have director Yorgos Lanthimos and costume designer Holly Waddington. She's had various roles in the costume department since 2007, but her notable work has been Lady Macbeth and the pilot for The Great,
which we love.
But this year, she has racked up 24 nominations for her costume design of Poor Things, including a Costume Designer Guild Awards nomination, a BAFTA nomination, and now the Oscars.
Team Holly, she is killing it, man.
She is.
Well, Elizabeth, I am so excited to say, well, first we had Holly kind of on a podcast a few weeks ago when I met her in a museum, and if you all listen to it, thanks everyone for actually listening to it. It did a lot better than I imagined because it was in a Under construction museum, you could hear power drills in the background. My mic wasn't working. Holly was like, who is this guy? It was, the whole thing was a bit chaotic. It still was a great interview, but short. So I'm excited to say, though, that we got back together again just 2 days ago to talk about Poor Things. And it was hours before the Oscar nomination. So we don't talk about the nominations because they hadn't happened at that point. But if you could have heard my thoughts, I was like bugging to say like an early congratulations because it was so obvious to me. Like, girl, you're about to get nominated in a couple hours. But Holly's here in the studio to talk about the costumes of Poor Things. And after we played an interview, Elizabeth and I are going to get back together and talk about it.
I cannot wait to hear this.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I am so happy to welcome to the podcast, for real this time, costume designer Holly Waddington. Hey Holly, how's it going?
Yeah, it's great, thanks. How are you, Spencer?
I'm doing good. It's so good to see you so soon again. I'm glad that you had time to talk with me again about Poor Things, because I love this movie.
And I love talking about Poor Things.
Oh, well, good, because then we're going to have a good time. Well, let's start from the beginning. Poor Things is such a unique, creative film. What initially drew you to work on a costume design for Poor Things?
Well, it was a bit of a no-brainer, really, because I was already a big fan of Yorgos' work. I'd seen all of his films and I'd loved all of them. And also I was a big fan of Tony McNamara's, who I had worked with on The Great. I did the designed the costumes for the pilot episode of The Great. And I love his voice, love his writing. I think he's a totally new voice, actually, that we haven't really heard before. As I feel about Yorgos's work, you know, they're making this really idiosyncratic, singular, subversive, interesting work that's very much of our times.
Right. Yeah, no, it is very fascinating. It just feels like such a great collaboration between you and all these incredible filmmakers. And one in particular is, of course, Emma Stone, who is incredible as Bella Baxter. I'm so excited to talk about Bella Baxter. So the time period that Poor Things takes place in feels Victorian. But when it comes to Bella Baxter, you really seem to mix eras and materials, departing from what we know as traditional Victorian. So tell me about that approach. It is so inspiring and innovative to me.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know, the film is sort of set in the 1890s. That's when we frame the silhouette. So all of those big sleeves, you know, it's supposed, we use the big sleeves because we just love them. As a team, we kind of hit on them and decided to sort of work with that date because of them. The book is set in the 1880s. The script is set in the 1880s. It didn't matter too much that we pushed it by a decade. But with Emma Stone's character Bella Baxter, the way that she is dressed is an expression of where she is in her development as a person. And so all the sartorial rules to do with how you put clothes together, in which order, what you wear at different times of day, how you wear your hair, you know, which bits of your body you can and can't reveal and at what time of day, all of those rules were just thrown out of the window because she's not in a position to know about those things. She's right. Got, it's like her brain is just completely new to the world and she's starting all over again. And so we could be very playful with those things. And I think that is really why they feel contemporary and different.
Right.
We, you know, we took the corset away. So that was the first thing that we just felt that having it, you know, shackling this very sort of free person whose movements are very unpredictable and very sort of flailing, like young children flail about, don't they? They don't have a controlled deportment. And so by kind of, I think we felt that it was essential to get rid of the corset for the reason of not wanting to bind her, but also because conceptually it would have felt really not right to have this free character shackled in a piece of bondage. And right. So that's the first thing that stops it from feeling like a period drama, because the corset is the thing that creates the period silhouette. And then if you have the hair down, long hair down in that way, you know, that's the other thing. That's the other big rule broken, because Victorian women have their hair up, and I'm sure occasionally they wore it down, but it's probably when they were going to bed, or you don't really see many pictures or paintings of women with their hair down, yeah. Unless they were like really avant-garde artist's wife or artist or something. And then, of course, I was playing with how Emma Stone and I were playing with how these clothes would be put together. So the idea was that she would be dressed by her housemaid in the morning in a proper sort of ladies' bodice and skirt, but that she would have, things would have come off and dismantled, you know, quite early into the day. So she'd just often have bare legs and these funny little knicker nappy cover things on and blouse. And sometimes we'd get to see her underpinnings. And then when she goes off to Lisbon, she no longer had her housemaid, so she had to do it all herself. And so I was thinking of young children, you know, maybe 5-year-old children dressing up in grown-up's clothes, and it's all a little bit discordant and ad hoc. So I was playing with all of those ideas, and I think that's how we created this particular language of the clothes.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. I was going to bring up the corset too, but to that point, I feel like the main theme really with one of the main themes in her costumes is just the idea of freedom. It's she's stripping kind of throughout the day because she's very toddler-like, and also the corset really opens, without the corset, opens her up to a world of new possibility. It's very, very intelligent and very fascinating. And I also want to talk about the use of colors.
Yes.
Her Bella Baxter's color palettes are very, feel specific and direct. Like, you definitely had an idea with these specific colors, especially like golds, yellows, sky blues. It feels very optimistic and joyful, but then also in ways kind of out of place of what you would consider from a Victorian era film. So tell me about the use of color palettes in creating Bella's costumes.
So when she gets to Lisbon, that's when we start to see the world in colour. It's as if she's just stepped, it's the first time that she's seen the world really as it is, because before that she's been stuck in the house in this black and white world. It's sort of like a beautiful prison that she's been kept in. So when she arrives in Lisbon, everything is like a sort of technicolour dream. And, you know, the set design is just these gorgeous colours, these beautiful skies. And yeah, I wanted to put her in one of these very optimistic, dreamy colours, and found this gorgeous blue fabric and felt like that. Yeah, let's go for this. And then, you know, the knickers, they're very sunny. Like, the yellows change as we go through the film. Like, they start off being really quite, just really dreamy and optimistic. And I did use a lot of yellows. I really was drawn to yellow for her character because of its association with sun and joy and sunflowers, and also with the black hair. The black and yellow are very, I think they just are, they make a really striking combination. And I mean, I've said this to quite a few people now, but I may have said this already to you, Spencer, but when I was about 9, I read years ago a book about color and culture. And there was a bit that I never forget, which was all about nature's warning colours. And it was about how black and yellow are in nature. They're the colours of warning. And that's why bees and wasps are those colours. Often poisonous frogs are those colours. And it's why in the urban environment we use black and yellow to denote warning or caution. And I thought it would be quite interesting to use that with that black hair. I think as soon as we had that black hair, the decision to have that black hair, it gave me the option really of using a really sort of rich spectrum of yellows that potentially I wouldn't have used otherwise, because that's yellows, those sorts of acid, strong yellows are quite hard colours to pull off if you're otherwise. I think those that hair allowed me to be very bold with the use of yellow.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It really gave you a chance to really play with really different colors and ways the cautionary colors of black and yellow. Quite interesting, actually. I'm going to rewatch the film again and kind of think about how that works into our costumes. That's really interesting. I'm glad you told me that.
That color that I hadn't meant, that I only sort of remembered this recently, which is that early on in the process of working with Yorgos, when we talked about colors, I was showing him colors for Bella, and he said, "Oh, you're talking about the colors of a rotting apple."
Mm.
And I went off to my phone and looked at rotting apple Google search. And when you look at the colors of rotting apples and what comes up, as apples rot, that they throw up a whole spectrum of colors that are both quite turgid and, as you'd imagine, browns, but also right. really vivid yellows and pinks. And so when I saw that, I then did this huge mood boards that we had in our office for a long time. And I really did use a lot of those colors that they really informed a lot of the colors. And I'd only remembered that through having all these interviews with people like yourself. Hmm. It came back to me recently. I thought, well, rotting apple.
I'm going to Google rotting apples as soon as we're done.
The rotting apple is in there.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I'm definitely going to look that up. One thing I loved was the use of textiles and materials, especially the use of latex. I just thought it was so interesting. We have that latex coat that she wears when she's in Paris, and then she wears a yellow, I believe it's a gown, I believe in Lisbon, that looks like it has latex like trimming on edge. I might be wrong about that, but I wanted to ask you about the use of latex and just how textiles and materials played a role in your work.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted everything to feel, the biggest thing that I knew from the get-go was that I wanted everything to be really organic and to have a sort of bodily quality to it. So to feel very organic and as if it was sort of living and breathing. And so a lot of the things that I was looking at were things that, you know, maybe things that live in the sea, like sea anemones, urchins, seaweed, just things that have a lot of life to them. You know, the Victorian dress had a lot of decoration on it, like tons, layers of things, feathers and jet and beads and loads of stuff. Lace is obviously a big feature of Victorian dress. And I felt like these are the things that really trap the period, like really feel very Victorian and heavily load the clothes with the sense of being from the Victorian age. And I thought, I think the big design decision, or one of them, was to just get rid of that and not to use those things, and to replace the texture with textures that we made ourselves or textures that we found. So we had this little smocking machine that we were using to, we had a couple of them actually. It was using to sort of smock delicate fabrics up to create this kind of frilly, almost like the texture that you see on the lining of the intestine. Or if you look at like tripe, if you go to a butcher's and see tripe, it has this kind of frilly quality. Or, and I was the fabric buyers were going out around the fabric shops looking for unruly textures that looked a little bit bodily or a bit like skin, or, you know, everything. So that the latex was all about skin and feeling connected to the body in that sense, because it has particular sort of texture, but really texture was key. And, you know, if you think about that pale blue outfit that she wears in Lisbon, that has a kind of spongy quality to it. Has that everything had texture in it. The thing that you're talking about with the yellow plastic trimming, I think there was an evening dress that she wears in Portugal, in Lisbon, and the trimming is all in polyurethane. We use a lot of latex, but we also use loads of polyurethane because we could frill it and do lots of nice things with it that we could add onto the clothes. We use it to trim the edges of blouses.
Oh, it was so cool. That's probably my favorite costume. But so let's talk about the brothel scenes for a bit. we've seen brothels throughout many, many shows and films. This felt like a unique take on what you would imagine as like brothel costumes. How did you approach those scenes?
Well, I wanted to work against all of the things that we associate with brothels, really. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like we really know the language of sex clothes, like without even seeking it out. Like if you start looking up pictures of Victorian brothels, it's no surprise that Victorian prostitutes were wearing long stockings,
right?
Black stockings and corsets. Yeah. and I just feel like that is what we know and see. And I think also the bloomers, and I thought it'd be really good to look at something else. And because we had made this decision not to put Bella in a corset, I also thought it would be good not to put these women in corsets, just to get rid of the corset and to have their bodies very natural, not put into a shape by a corset, but to reveal the breasts. So these are things that probably nobody has noticed, but each of the women in the brothel had a bodice that had the breasts cut out so that they were kind of on display, and their waists were just normal. So you do all of this stuff because you do all of this stuff in such detail, and you just think nobody will even notice. But thankfully, people have noticed.
Yeah.
So, instead of using the colours that, that I would associate with brothels, porn, sex, everything, red and black. If you think about like here we have a shop called Anne Summers, which is like sexy underwear, and it's always black and red, purple, cherry, these colours. So I was just actively working against everything. I was thinking, what would be the most unsexy colour imaginable? It would be like the colour of old ladies' tights.
Yeah.
They're like nylon tights. And then that led on to, oh, well, what if everyone is wearing clothes, that their clothes are all skin colours, different shades of skin. Everything has this then. And I think what happened was the palette actually was very beautiful in that sense. And it felt very sensual. And those women did look really, I was very pleased with them in the end, because they all had latex stockings. Some of them had bare legs. Some of them didn't want to wear latex stockings because they have like a bit of an allergy. So some people can't wear latex.
Yeah, some people have an allergy, actually.
An allergy, yeah. And then they had these knickers that we made for them that were like almost like granny pants, like sort of grandma knickers, but quite long, but with a very deep V at the crotch. With lacing crisscrossing up through the crotch, a bit like those do you remember those Alexander McQueen trousers that he made that were the other way down the bottom? And the idea of those was that they displayed the pubic hair, which again is in modern culture, we don't want to see pubic hair. So I wanted to make a feature of the pubic hair.
Right.
I was basically trying to sort of just work actively against what we have in our culture, and I think it was quite fun to do it that way. And we found this fabric, which was one of the buyers found this fabric, which was a wool, like a black wool, that had loads of latex poured all over it, and it had this really interesting texture. So we bought the whole load of, we bought whatever they had in the shop, 30 meters of it, and it came with us to Budapest, and that's what we made all of the main costumes. So each of the women had one of these huge jackets with big sleeves. Some of them went to the floor and some of them stopped at the waist, and they exposed the breasts and they were all laced up. So they used that material. So that's more latex.
Right. Well, definitely worked out. So Emma Stone said in the production notes about the wedding dress, which I thought was so sweet. She said, I almost cried when I put it on. It was exquisite, sheer and delicate, but also incredibly strong. A bit like how I see the nature of sex as vulnerability and confidence blended in tandem. That is what the dress symbolized to me. It's an incredibly impactful statement of a dress. And I thought that was so lovely. And also, that dress was so cool. I was fascinated by the sleeves, like always, the white. So tell me about what you and your team were thinking when you were putting together that very interesting wedding dress.
I love that. I was really amazed by what she was saying about that. She really, really liked it. I can tell when we took it to her in the morning. We'd all been up all through the night trying to get it. It was quite tricky. So the idea of it was that it was so that the bands going concentrically, horizontally through the dress, they were like this idea of marriage being a cage, like a form of imprisonment or entrapment. It's like a cage. But I thought it was really important that you could still see her body, that she was still visible. So it was kind of almost not really there. Well, that she was still very present in the dress. And then the huge sleeves, I wanted them to feel like balloons, like almost like helium balloons. So this dress takes up this huge volume. It's like a big dress, but it's actually also, you could fold it down. I think this is why Emma liked it so much, that I think that she herself really likes to be very free in her clothes, and her character really does. That, you know, that was a feature of Bella Baxter, that, you know, she's very free. So I think it was both like huge, and it's like a contradictory dress. It's sort of massive and with these huge sculptural sleeves, but also light as a feather, and you could move easily in it and feel. I think she probably felt quite liberated in the dress. For me, it was all about this metaphor of imprisonment and marriage, and these men wanting to entrap her. And underneath the, I think there are several layers in that dress. So we were a bit limited in our choices of things that we could make it out of. And I remember George, who I was working with, we were working together on this, and Joe. We just had to choose fabrics because it wasn't going to happen quickly enough. And I couldn't quite find the fabrics that I wanted, and getting things into Hungary from the UK was very difficult because of all the Brexit things going on. And I think George had found this millinery netting, which is, netting for hats. Mm-hmm. And it has this very, it's like chicken wire. It's plastic netting, basically. And that is what forms the structure of the dress. So millinery netting comes in very thin bolts. And so we had that sandwich between layers of organza and cotton tulle. So you get this buildup of different grid-like fabrics. And so, you know, it's many layers of grid-like forms pushing this idea of cage, but it's not a cage at all, because it's just like another, like, it's, you know, she's almost like unimprisonable,
right?
What I was thinking.
No, you can't keep Bella Baxter down. I love that. It's very interesting.
And the veil was good. Like the veil, because I remember sitting there the night before thinking, I don't know what to do with this veil, because this character would not wear a veil. Veils just look, they just look really pious and sort of virtuous. However which way you wear them, they make you look sacrificial or something like that. And so it was really on the morning of the wedding scene, I had this veil, and I said, I'm not really quite sure how we should put this on your head, but we can just not wear it, or we can. And she was very keen to just like wrap it around her head.
That's such a cool note.
And I think it really just was the right, she sort of did that in character, and I think that was it was the only way to wear that, she'd wear a veil,
right? It came out, I think it worked out the way it was supposed to, because it almost feels like a superhero mask, actually. Like, she just feels like very present, and I love the way you use the veil.
She also thinking back to Rose for some, you know, this is, you know, how he wore that headband.
Yeah.
It's like a bandana, but around her face.
Well, speaking of feeling imprisoned, though, when she goes back with Alfie Blessington, I thought the costume that she wears at the manor was actually quite odd, because it's a very creepy manner, and it feels very, the orange feels very gothic and kind of like not like her in that moment. So what was your thinking when putting her in that manner costume? It was like a deep orange.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite an ugly color combination, and that dress is not supposed to be beautiful. So these are the clothes of her character prior to being Bella. So it right. isn't supposed to feel like one of Bella's dresses at all. These are the clothes of Victoria, who she was before she threw herself off the bridge.
Right. So it's not her, basically.
No. And the same as the dress that she throws herself off the bridge in the first scene, that very blue military, also very military inspired dress. So I was trying to create a couple of dresses that really were absolutely at the opposite end of the spectrum to the things that Bella wears. So, you know, they don't have these air-filled light sleeves or this air and airy light quality. They are sort of heavy and oppressive, and the very sort of fussy details on them evokes ideas of imprisonment, but really sort of, you know, like the blue dress, the sleeves are based on medieval armor. Oh, the orange dress has all of this military frogging going on the sleeves, and the collars are a bit like a sailor collar, but they actually look really sharp, like she looks like a big, massive, great big spear. and the colours, instead of being light and dreamy and optimistic, they're like quite heavy and
heavy and goth,
and not really very nice. I was really surprised when my mum was in the costume exhibit, and she said, "This is." She, from the photo, she said, "That's my favorite costume." I just thought it was hilarious because it wasn't supposed to be gorgeous, or it's supposed to be like,
I mean, on its own, it's a gorgeous costume, but when you see poor, like, you know, happy, joyful Bella, who just came from her beautiful, you know, white angelic wedding, they see her in that costume, it's a very hard contrast, and you feel sad. But on its own, I agree with your mom, it is a beautiful costume.
I was very surprised.
Well, Holly, I love talking with you, and like I said, I love this movie. I'm just so happy for you. Lots of congratulations to go around. What do you hope the audience takes away from Poor Things as they head to the theaters and see your costumes on screen?
I mean, I just think it's fantastic that we've got this. I just think that, you know, Yorgos is a true artist, and I think it's wonderful that we've got this. And he is an auteur, someone who is making work that really embraces, that is really, like, I just think he's so unusual, and he's so left field, and he's working with he's very different in the way that he approaches his creative collaborators. And I think it's just fantastic that he's made this film. You know, I think the way that he works is really brave and bold. And I think he takes great risks in his work. And I think it's absolutely brilliant that he's made this film that sort of seems to be appealing to that people really like.
Yeah.
And I think more really artistic people like Yorgos should make films. I think I just hope that people from Bella take, you know, just in terms of how she dresses, you know, she's not at all, she's just doing it her way, and she's not too bothered really about sartorial rules. I don't think we live in an age where anybody is particularly bothered. But no, maybe people are. Yeah, I think people should be themselves and wear and sort of dress for themselves and wear what feels good.
Right.
They should take that and also be curious and embrace life and, you know, try not to be too jaded by life.
Right. Like Bella. Well, with that, costume designer Holly Waddington, thank you so much for joining me. I am so happy for you. Such a great film. And I just can't wait to see everyone head to the theaters and see Poor Things and share what their favorite costumes and how they connect with Bella. It's quite an incredible film. So thank you for talking with me.
Thank you. It's lovely to speak to you again, Spence. Thank you for your questions.
Hi, this is Dan, audio engineer of the podcast, here to let you know that if you wanted to support the show, you can head over to theartofcostume.com/podstore. There you can buy some awesome TeePublic merch with the podcast logo, such as a shirt, coffee mug, stickers, and of course, a baby onesie. Thanks for all your support.
I love Holly. She is so sweet. And I just want to, talk to her whenever I can, honestly. She brings me so much joy.
Absolutely. And like, I love just like the thought she put into it, the little details. I don't know like how I missed all the latex.
Really?
In this movie. Yeah. I think I was just so overwhelmed by how much I liked it.
Yeah.
That like, I feel like I need to go see this again. But like, as you started talking about it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like all this just beautiful, unconventional detail is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I've saw this movie once for fun. And then the second one was like for more detail. And also there was that exhibition. So I really got to see a lot of the costumes up close and personal to see a lot of the textiles. But yeah, there's so many like hidden like notes and interesting, innovative textiles and materials in all the costumes. I love the use of color. I'm not a yellow person at
yes.
all. Yes. Because yellow is like my direct enemy being somebody who wears all black. But I love the use of yellow and like that light baby blue too. It just works so perfectly.
Yes. And it was really that yellow. It was funny earlier when you mentioned Crimson Peak. Because when I was listening to your interview, as soon as she started talking about the yellow in Danger, I thought of Crimson Peak, the yellow gowns in that.
Oh, yeah. The canary.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is incredible. It's so amazing.
But back to the... Actually, just remember the latex costume where she gets to Paris and it looks like she's wearing like a giant condom. That costume, yeah. That coat. That's a good one.
It is so good. Especially just because like she's like for someone who knows nothing about life, because she's literally a child. Like, yeah. It's a child's brain in an adult's body. Spoiler.
If you made it this far,
I hope you watch the movie. But she's so prepared for every situation.
Yeah.
Because of how Dr. Godwin like raised her. Because you have like stupid Duncan under the little parasol and she's like got her raincoat on. She was like, what? This is fine.
Yeah. How'd she pack all those clothes in those briefcases or suitcases? I don't know. But who cares? Speaking of Duncan, I didn't really get to ask Holly about any of the men. We only had a limited time. And I realized like halfway through, like I'm not going to be able to get through all my questions. So I did what any normal costume design journalist would do and just threw out all the men's questions and just focused on Bella Baxter for the rest of the time.
I mean, good call. But the men really were unique in this film. It's so cool because she does like so Victorian, so 1890s, but not.
Yeah.
Especially for the men's. You're like, oh, yeah, this is that time period, but something's different.
Yeah, it's definitely like Holly's, well, and Yorgos Lanthimos, like their take on this period. That's why I've seen a lot of people say like it's not a period film, but it is because it's definitely set in that time and you could see it happening around them. But she just gives each of these characters such an interesting perspective and it happens through the clothing. I love Duncan Wedderburn, played by Mark Ruffalo. He's such a fantastic character because you hate him, but you also like love to hate him too. He's so funny.
I never thought Mark Ruffalo could ever play a character I hated. And now we have Duncan Wedderburn, who is just like the worst of toxic masculinity.
Yeah, he's awful. Like,
the embodiment of it. And it was so wonderful.
You brought up the scene when they're in Paris and he's under the parasol and he's just like saying they're freezing in like a full like three-piece suit. It's so funny because he just looks so out of place. But it's like probably the only thing he has at this point. So these are like now his PJs at the same time, you know?
I know. And I love it because he starts off so like so cool, so like debonair. Like he's like, yes, I am sophisticated. And then he's like, what's happening?
Yeah, you watch like that debonair like sophistication like unravel throughout the film, mm-hmm. which is really fun. Then we have Dr. Godwin Baxter and Max McCandles, played by Willem Dafoe and Rami Youssef. These are two great characters. I love them.
Yeah, I loved Max. I love Rami Youssef.
I knew you were going to say that. She liked Max.
I did. Because, like, he's all into the science. He's all in. But, like, he does understand. Unlike Dr. Baxter, he does understand like the moral quandary they find themselves in, and like is willing to treat Bella as an equal, sees her as an equal, and is just there to support his girl at the end mm-hmm. of the day.
Yeah. And I love Dr. Baxter's costumes too. He reminds me of, and it's like that such like a mad scientist look. It's done very effortlessly. Yeah. I would say I need to go back and listen to my first interview of Holly because she talked about it. So if you're all listening, you have two interviews to kind of go through and get all your behind the costume facts. But I just love the use of like color and just like how he's kind of like pieced together a little bit. It mm-hmm. gives like mad scientist qualities without like overly saying it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely a person who, he's not rejecting the style of his time, but he's definitely choosing what he wants from it. What he thinks is going to be practical and useful to him is what
that's a good
I
way
got.
To put it. Mm-hmm. And then we have Alfie Blessington at the end, which, I mean, I did not like this guy. I don't like the way he made me feel.
I hated him so much. I was like, excuse me, sir? What?
Yeah.
What?
He's a bit creepy. And actually, I feel like his costume. Yeah. Okay. A lot bit creepy. And his costume, I feel like, said a lot of that about him, too. Like, it's just, he's so, like, unsettling. I mean, he has, like, some fur in it. It's, like, big. And I think, like, the big collar kind of, like, I don't know. It makes him feel very like big and strong but scary. And the use of like black and red is always a scary combination for me.
Yeah.
So the like you see this guy pretty immediately and you're like, uh-oh, like I don't like this. I don't like where this is going.
I loved all his like medals on there, and it's like, dude, calm down. Like, why do you feel the need to wear these just like chilling around your house? There's something clearly wrong with you.
Yeah, he's very like, I said this in an interview of Holly, like he brings like a very gothic like moment to the film. And so on the costume that Bella wears to dinner with him too, it's like that orange, it's like all very like kind of gothic, and it's creepy when you put it against like the colorful bright colors that we're used to throughout the film. So that's like 20 minutes of the film is unsettling at best.
Yeah. Yeah. But Spencer, this brings us to our favorite game. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. This was an easy one for me. Let's do it.
Same. Hit it, Daniel.
The one costume to rule them all.
Spencer, what was your one costume to rule them all?
So I really loved the, it's not just yellow. It's like close to gold, I would say. It's between yellow and gold. It's almost there. It's this dinner gown that she wears kind of early on in her adventure with Mr. Wedderburn. Bella Baxter's like golden gown that has what looks like to me latex at the bottom. It could be vinyl as well. Mm-hmm. It might be in a dress she decides to punch the baby in. I don't remember. But it's so good. The sleeves are like big, but they're different though. They have like a triangular shape to them a little bit, which I just absolutely love. I saw this costume in person and I was attached to it immediately. Like I imprinted on this costume. I want, this is a top tier one costume, rule them all, red alert. Please, someone keep this in the museum forever, Smithsonian. I love this costume. I think that if I could give this a costume, a Oscar, I would. It deserves it. It's so good.
That really is. That gown is spectacular. And it is one of the first like really big like in-your-face pieces she wears. And it is. It's so her. It's so this movie. I loved it.
And the black hair, by the way, which we didn't really talk too much, it really adds to all the costumes too. The black hair does something for these costumes, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I agree. It just like offsets everything perfectly.
Yeah. And what's yours, Elizabeth?
My one costume to rule them all was her wedding gown.
Honestly, like, I kind of saw this for you.
Yeah. Like the moment I saw it on screen, I was like, I need this. This is incredible. And then listening to her talk about it, like it's so Bella. Like,
yeah,
it's so Bella. It's so her. It's like her. I feel like this is really one of the first like steps she takes that she's like, yes, this is me like choosing the life that I want. Without like the pressure of the people around her too much, but still like she is kind of confining herself to this convention, and it's just, it's her, it's of the time, and I just loved it.
It's beautiful. And I love, I mean, the sleeves, I'm a sleeves person. I could talk about these sleeves forever, and they're so perfect.
They're so perfect. Oh my God. The, like, I will say, I think the sleeves are really what got me.
Yeah.
With this one, they're just, it's beautiful. It's perfect. It says so much about her and the story that's being told.
Yeah. I mean, you have the same one costume to rule them all as Emma Stone. So I don't know. You might win this one.
Sounds like I'm on the right track.
Well, if you all have a different one costume to rule them all, make sure you leave us a voicemail at 626-515-1826 or email us at theartofcostume@gmail.com. Tell us what your one costume to rule them all is, because I'm sure we all have different ones. And honestly, we're all correct because they're all just top tier costumes.
Yes. Spencer, what are we watching next week?
Elizabeth, next week we are going to be watching The Color Purple. And I'm so excited because we have an interview with costume designer Francine Jameson Tanchuk, who did the costumes. We brought her up a little bit last year when we had Aggie Rogers on the podcast. And Aggie talked about how one of her supervisors back then on The Color Purple in the 80s was now designing the costumes for The Color Purple in 2023, which was, of course, Francine, who is also going to be honored with a Career Achievement Award at this year's Costume Designer Guild Awards. So I'm so excited to have this icon herself on the podcast to talk about The Color Purple. And I hope you all join us because it's really a good one.
I am so excited. I cannot wait. If you all are also excited and can't wait, you can get some more content from us in the meantime on Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod, on TikTok.
Always TikTok.
On TikTok at The Art of Costume. If you need a little Art of Costume merch, you can head to theartofcostume.com/podstore. And if you loved what you heard, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star text review on Apple Podcast.
Hey, it really does help.
Okay. It does. A lot. A lot, a lot.
Elizabeth, this has been a fun episode. I love Poor Things, and I love that you loved it. And I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this again pretty soon. So
for a long time.
Yeah. New obsession alert. Thank you all for listening.
Bye, everyone. Have a fantastic week.
The Art of Costume podcast is hosted and produced by Elizabeth Joy Glass and Spencer Williams. Our audio engineering and editing is done by Dan White. Follow us on TikTok at The Art of Costume and Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod. If you want to support the show, go to theartofcostume.com/podstore. For more podcast updates, costume reviews, deep dives, and interviews, go to theartofcostume.com, a blog dedicated to highlighting the best in costume design.